You are listening to the Myth TV Cast. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Myth TV Cast. My name is Pat Davila. With me is my co-host, Dan Fry.
How's it going, Pat?
Excellent. You're here in person. It's been a while
since you've actually
been here.
I know.
We've been fighting the sickness, the plague, bubonic, swine flu, whatever.
Yeah, I think I'm finally over it.
Yeah, but none of us actually had the swine flu, luckily, but we've been fighting nasty colds that have been going around. It's been like one after the other, and we're all feeling better.
Yeah, unfortunately, a couple of my neighbors did go through the swine flu.
It's gone around. Yeah. So. Anyhow, so you've had a chance to upgrade, right?
Yes, I have.
You did a clean install?
I changed everything. So I'm going to say that. I changed everything. But I want to preface this whole conversation with don't drink and install. You can name this episode that, don't drink and install.
Don't get smashed and try to do something complicated.
Because I was watching the hockey game. I had about four or five beers watching the hockey game. And then I just said, okay, I'm going to go ahead and do my installs and do all that stuff. And I ended up having to redo everything anyway because I was fat fingering things and typing funny and whatnot. And so I'll put this out to everybody. Don't drink and install.
I think those are wise words.
Yeah.
Anytime you're doing anything like complicated, like technical, like actually I think it's a bit of a bell curve.
Yeah.
When it comes to like anything technical and drinking, like you'll hit a point, you know, you're drinking and you know, yeah, this is great. I'm really creative. Things are going great. Blah, 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 blah. It's going fast.
And then you come back to
And then you hit that point where it just drops off.
Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, we've all been there, but I'm glad you got everything mostly working, right?
Yeah. So that's, I have quite a bit of stuff here. I've actually changed everything around. Okay. So
describe your old setup before you go to
my old setup. My old setup was I had the main Myth TV box sitting in my entertainment center. It was a combined front end back end. It had two tuner cards in it. Three if you include the PCA or the PVR 150, which is no longer useful for me with the analog switchover. And then I had a server in the back room that had my RAID card in it with my two hard drives sitting in there, and that's where I would store all of like my pictures,
media.
My kids, my media, all of that stuff was
so
stored
the Myth
back
box,
there.
So you had a similar situation set up as my setup,
right?
Had like a dedicated server with a RAID card, doing just you know your archived media,
exactly,
videos,
exactly.
Pictures, music, whatnot.
Right. So what I've done now is I've completely ripped apart these boxes and rebuilt them back up, cleaned them all out. I pulled out my...
Did you do the server as well?
Yep. I pulled out my PCHD 5500 card and put that in the server. The server is now being repurposed as my master backend.
I see. So you're running RAID for your storage and everything?
Well, I got four drives in there. Two on the RAID card, one that's going to be just for the Myth TV partition, and then one that's just for the root partition.
Okay, so you got your system running on a separate partition.
I got all of the Myth TV stuff running on a separate drive as well, and then all the media on the RAID cards.
Okay, okay.
So basically, what that buys me is that I have at least a redundant backup there. I also have an account out on Amazon Web Services so that I can back up anything like the pictures and whatnot. So that stuff it's not set up yet, but it's all going to be being synchronized nightly. You know, out there.
Let me ask you, what is that running you to do that?
I have 46 gigabytes worth of data out there, and it cost me like $7 a month.
That's not bad.
No.
I should probably do something similar.
It's very easy to do. There's a nice little Java client.
Now you're doing RAID 1 like me, where it's just
a mirror.
It's just a mirror.
Yep, it's just a mirror. And it's just two drives. You know, and then I have...
How big are the drives in the RAID?
They are each 500 gig drives.
Same setup as me.
Mm-hmm. Then I got another... I got two 250 gig drives that were in there that just weren't hooked up to anything. So I made one the root partition and then one the varlib Myth TV, which that, I'm running Mythbuntu, so that's where all the recordings go. All the new stuff also go there. The fan art, the banners, the screen capture. I mean, any of those new things that are out there as a part of this new release of Myth TV are all stored, you know, onto that drive itself as one partition. It's an XSF partition, whereas everything else is EXT3.
Okay.
So basically what I did was is I download the 64-bit MythTV install for Karmic, and I ran through the whole setup process using only the master backend options while going through the setup. Okay.
So you're not going to be using that at all if it's a front end, because it's a server.
No. Well, I'll get to that, because I'm going to have to make some slight changes to that going forward. But yeah, the install process is very straightforward, you know. But what I typically do though is once you get to that final step before you run MythTV setup, this is where I finish it. I don't go through the whole MythTV setup at this point. I reboot it, you know, because that's, you know, pop the disk out, reboot it. I will run all the updates on it. I'll install like the NVIDIA drivers or any of the closed drivers that are like that are needed. And then I will run the MythTV setup. And the purpose behind that is I've run into issues in the past where some of the database entries don't necessarily get created appropriately or whatever, but I typically stop it right there. And I also stopped it at this point too. I didn't want to actually set up the PCHD TV 5500 card at this point in time, because I didn't want that to be the primary capture card.
I understand.
Card.
You want it to show up as like right. number two or three or whatever.
And now I know you can mess around with the priority afterwards, but I still wanted the FireWire
to show up as number
to
one.
Show up as number one over there. So the first thing that you have to do, of course, is set up a static IP address. You also have to set up a static IP address inside the MythTV setup. So once I did finally reboot that machine and get all the updates and whatnot installed, the only thing that I really did was inside the Myth setup was to go in and actually set up the static IP address. So I had to first set the static IP address on the box, and then I had to set the static IP address inside of MythTV. Now this causes a problem a little bit down the road with the front end setup, and I'll go into that as well. So once this stage was done, I was able to switch over to installing the secondary backend / front end on the separate box in my entertainment center.
Now, when you say secondary backend, what are you doing on? You're actually doing recording on
it? This is doing recording on it. It'll do commercial flagging. It'll do all of that stuff right on the box itself, as well as feed the content off of the backend, which would be the pictures and all that stuff, all the rest of the media. I can watch live TV right on this. I can actually switch to running the cam card on the backend server over the network and that all works fine as well.
So the main point of making this the secondary backend / front end mm-hmm. is that your primary backend has all your archived media.
Exactly.
On there.
Exactly.
And you want that to be local to the primary.
Right. Right. So I mean, it's gonna do all of that. It's gonna do all the database work. It's gonna do all the house cleaning. It's gonna do all the downloading from schedules to rect. It's gonna handle all of those back end tasks, while the front end can sit there and be dedicated, you know, specifically to running, watching a movie or, you know, watching TV, listening to music, all the features that you can do with MythTV.
Now, I've never done a secondary back end setup. So basically, my assumption is that mm-hmm. when you do a secondary back end, it's going to connect to the primary back end database.
Correct. When you go through this install process for the secondary back end, it asks you, when you select that box, what is the IP address of the master back end? And you enter that information into the front. Now, this is what caused a slight little problem for me here. When I did this initial setup the first time, I went through and only set the static IP address for the master backend. Now, if you look at the first screen in the general setup underneath the MythTV setup, you have two options in there to set IP addresses. You have to set the first one to be the IP address of the box that you're on. It can't use the local loopback address. Because the problem that I ran into is once I had the capture card set up for the FireWire, it looked like it was on correctly. However, when you went to go schedule a recording or even just watch live TV with it, it said all capture cards are currently in use, but nothing is being done. It actually says that nothing is recording, but the capture card's in use.
Yeah, they're busy.
So it didn't understand why it wasn't. So when I went back and looked at that, I said, oh, okay, let me set the IP address here, and everything worked fine right. After that.
Usually, even if I have for the longest time I was running, you know, standalone main box, back end, front end combined, I always put the actual IP address in those entries.
Right.
I never did the loopback in 127.0.0.0 or whatever.
Now, one thing that also buys for you too is if you happen to have any UP and P devices in the house, that is what enables the UPnP server on the box.
Putting the IP address.
Putting the IP address in there. Yep, because that actually exposes it out, exposes the database out, you know, so it can get access to those directories and whatnot and that content.
Now, just as a side note, but the UPnP servers, I know with the older versions, it was pretty much busted.
You could get certain things out of it, but unless you also set up jobs like the myth rename or whatever, right. you really couldn't tell what was what unless you could you decipher what the...
I guess the reason behind the issues with that was that there's a standard, but it's not that set, and it seems there's different variations of it depending on the device that's
in
being used.
In this version, however...
What implementation
in,
they have?
Yeah, in Myth 22, they have now rewritten that completely.
So it works pretty much.
I believe so, yeah. I mean, I can browse for it on the network from my machines, and I can see them out there. I can see everything out there.
Yeah.
So it works. It works pretty nicely.
I guess devices like that would be like a PlayStation 3,
yeah, Xbox 360, Popcorn Hour, anything
Mica,
that can,
something
yeah.
like that. Any of those type of devices, you should be able to see something.
Right.
What if a Roku works?
I imagine it would. I imagine it would.
The whole thing with Roku, I think it's
that's a Linux box underneath.
Yeah, but
Linux,
it's all
right?
dedicated to just doing the Netflix stuff.
Right.
I don't think anybody's hacked it, but anyway, back to your saying. Yeah.
Okay, so with this install process, I did the same exact thing as I did with the back end. I got to the point where it came time to set up Myth TV, do the run the Myth TV setup, and I stopped it right there, rebooted, got everything up to date, got the NVIDIA drivers installed, so everything was looking fine on my screen. Now, since I did the install, I've also enabled the PPA for the 190 driver.
Oh, did you?
Yeah,
you found that.
Yeah, so you can go and actually install the PPA for the 190 driver. You notice a little bit better quality and whatnot. With
yeah,
it.
When I was playing around with the Avanard stuff, with my 21 setup with 904, Ubuntu 904, I noticed that going from 185 to 190 was a big jump. It seemed to be a little more stable. It wasn't as flaky.
Yeah,
and the CPU was slightly less than 185.
Right.
But I don't know. I have 185. I got it working. It's working fine. It looks fine. I'm happy with it, so I'm going to leave it.
Right.
There's no reason. You know, a lot of times they say, should you upgrade to a new version release or, you know, whatever distribution? If you got what you got set up, everything's working, you need it, and it works fine, and there's no real hardcore reason to upgrade, then really you don't need to.
Right.
You know? Yeah. Like, for instance, with Ubuntu 9.10 and Myth 22, I got a PVR 1212 like months ago, and it was sitting on my shelf, not being used.
Right.
I want to get that thing used as quickly as possible.
Right.
And the other thing was the VDPAU stuff was all it's all built in there, so I wanted that.
Yeah, and I love VDPAU. It is just
it delivers,
awesome. Yeah. I actually could tell that my machine it's a dual core 64-bit AMD processor. It was actually running one core was always seemed to be running at about 100% with 904, with 810. I mean, it goes back as far as I've been running it. Now, when I watch something high def, and even while it's recording something, I'm not noticing anywhere near. I max out at about 10% CPU utilization. You know, I mean, that is nothing compared to what it was.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Do the same thing. Run a flash video. Not even a high def.
Yeah.
Just a standard def.
There's a new version coming out, I think, on the 10th of December.
Yeah, we'll see. Mm-hmm. Supposedly, the offload that we were talking about, it's not going to happen on this release.
Not on this. Well, this is still version 10 though. It's not 10.1.
10.1. I think the Windows one is going to do it. I don't know if the Linux one's going
to. Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought I read the Linux one.
Well,
was
we'll
do
see.
It, so, yeah.
We'll see. Hopefully it improves because Flash sucks.
Yeah.
It's
horrible. Yeah.
Such a hog.
Yeah.
Source hog. Yeah. So now that you've been running, how long have you been running now? A week? 2 weeks?
Let's see. I did this. I had off the whole week of Thanksgiving, so I'd been running it since that Saturday night of the weekend before Thanksgiving.
Okay, so it's almost 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm, yep.
How do you like it?
Well, I like it a lot. I do.
Well, what's jumping out at you? What do you notice like different?
Well, the interface is outstanding.
Yeah.
I absolutely love the interface. I had some issues at first with getting a lot of like the fan art and all that stuff download.
Which theme
first.
Are you going with?
I have the Mythbuntu theme on there right
I
now.
I like that a lot.
I do too. I think they did an outstanding job with it. Once I saw the screenshots out there initially on it, I'm like, I kept jumping. I mean, I cannot wait to get this moved
over. I noticed on like the mailing list, the Myth TV users mailing list, that people who aren't running Mythbuntu, guys that are running Medora or whatever, Linhouse, whatever, even guys that build their own, they like the theme and they want to get it going into
They want to move it. They want that in there. Yeah, it's
nice.
A really,
it's
really
nice.
Nice
it looks
theme.
Slick. Mm-hmm. They did a very nice job, I have to say.
Right.
And I like it. I think it looks great.
Yeah. Well, after I had the front end set up, so this was recording FireWire. I had the NFS mount things for like my pictures and music so that I can play them on the front end itself. I got all of that set up, the remote control set up and whatnot. Everything was working fine. And initially, I started off with the Myth Changer script that we talked about a few weeks ago.
Right, for FireWire.
Yeah, I eventually pulled that out and switched it out for a FireWire. I'm sorry, for an IR blaster.
Which IR blaster?
It's the blaster that's right inside of the Philips Windows MCE remote control.
Yeah, that works great. It works great. For years.
There's a script right in, let me see if I remember it. It's user share, Myth TV, all the way down to changers, whatever that happens to be. There is an IR changer script that's already right in there. There's a couple of them actually.
Bash or Perl?
There's a Perl one. I think I'm using the Bash one. I was messing around to make sure I could get four channels out of it. I put some electrical tape over the end and everything works fine with it. I haven't had any issues with that. That works really, really good. Nice. Unlike the Myth Changer script, which seems to keep blowing up on me. It almost seemed like it was doing like a power cycle, because if I actually sent the power cycle command, I was getting that 1904 code that you see in there periodically, and it would fail. It would switch to like a music channel, and then it would just, you know, fail with a bad recording and dump
stop.
Out to the yeah.
Yeah, it would stop.
So once I switched this out, everything seemed to be working fine with it. I haven't had any issues with the FireWire. I'm sorry, with the FireWire recordings and it not changing channels.
Right, you're doing the IR blasting.
Yeah, the IR blasting works great.
For the longest time, I used the Python script with the standard def cable box.
And that's in there as well. There's Python one. There's a Bash one. And what was the other one? There were three of them right in the same directory together.
Yeah. The only thing that you have to think about when you're doing IR blasting is you're going to need there's the two files. There's the LARCD configuration file, which contains the actual codes for the remote. And then there's the LIRCRC one, which has the actual application specific codes.
Right.
What the pass.
Right. Now I am planning on I am going to replace this with a command IR module. So I am planning on picking that up in the very near future.
Now what is that for people who don't know?
Command IR products are basically they're USB or internal. They have an internal. I think it's a PCI version. IR blasters, and they allow for like up to 8 devices or something like that at one time. I actually want to replace my Logitech Harmony remote, which the thing right now is a piece of shit. Okay, the buttons don't work. You
which
can't
one,
change
which one
the
button.
This is the 890 with the IR module that it has. The RF module that does the blasting locally, so you could go through walls and whatnot.
Right.
But the button, I don't know if my kids just slammed it around or not or what, but the
shot.
Yeah, I cannot change the volume anymore. I have to actually go up to the receiver and change the volume and all that. So what my intention is to actually have pull out that Microsoft remote that I'm using for the Myth TV now, because I can use that remote even with this other blaster and have that control my stereo receiver or the home theater receiver and the TV as well.
That's pretty good.
So yeah, so that's my intention with that, and I'm hoping to do that either before the end of the year or.
Well, what does that go for?
It's like about $100. It's like $80.
A little expensive.
It's about $80 right now. But if you don't happen to have like any extra blaster wires around, I think it's like another $20, and they send you a bundle of those things with it too. So it's really not that bad, but and it will control all of the devices for you.
That's pretty good.
So yeah, I'm looking to do that, and hopefully in the near future.
So that's a device that a lot of the hardcore home people use.
Right. And they have different versions. They have internal ones, they have light ones, or they have USB ones. I think they even have one that has like even like an LCD module. If I remember correctly.
Display on the front.
Yeah, and they had a whole bunch of different ones that you could choose from.
And all this stuff works in Linux without issue.
I believe it mainly supports Linux, so some of them might even be Linux only products.
Well, that's cool.
I'll have to check that again. But I thought I was reading that on the website that some of them were kind of like the PCHD 5500. That's a Linux only product.
That's great. That companies are like that,
right?
You know, if you see a company that comes out with a product that's like Linux only, especially home theater, man, you got to support them.
Definitely.
I know those guys were producing cards a long time ago.
Oh yeah, and I don't think that card has changed in the number of years that I had that card.
And once it's supported in the kernel, it just works.
Yeah, exactly.
Plug it in and works.
Now, that card brings me to another issue, because I did go back then on the master backend.
So this is a QAM card.
This is a QAM card, yeah. And setting this up now seems to be a bit more cumbersome than it was. I don't know why. It takes a lot longer. It's trying to test multiple things at one time, as well as whether or not it can decrypt channels. I still have a lot of channels, you know, and I don't need all those channels. So I more or less just mapped in the HD channels.
The six HDs.
Yeah, right. But I have a whole slew of other ones that I don't necessarily. It's not as many as what I had before with 904, but I still have a lot more than the six channels that you would get just for broadcast.
Yeah, it seems like they opened up a bunch of the standard channels. I noticed a few newer ones. That are
I mean, some of them are like PBSs.
A lot of redundant stuff. Yeah. Some of them are just the standard def versions of the network stations. There's a few couple in there that are different.
But it was a bit more cumbersome. This is actually what took me the longest to get back up and running. You know, and then to go through all of those channels manually after the
fact. Let me ask you, when you were doing scannings, did it seem to take a little longer than it used to?
Oh my God, if you check the little box that says try to decrypt it, it took like an hour and a half.
No, I didn't do that.
Yeah, it took quite a bit of time.
I think it's because they reordered the stations and they just have more channels now.
Well, there's that, but they changed how it's scanning, or at least what it shows me on the screen. It looks like they're scanning for more stuff. So I don't know if the standards have changed or whatever, but it looks like they're scanning for more stuff.
That's what I immediately noticed. That everything just took the QAM stuff just took a little longer, like at least double the amount of time that it used.
Right.
But to get it working and set up, it's pretty stable, right?
Yep. Oh my God, everything works really, really good. The storage groups, I have to say, are really going to be the way that this stuff is going to go forward when it comes to sharing out your other media. So right now it only supports doing videos, and videos that are, you know, H.264 or, you know, WMA or you know, some of those other codecs, but an ISO file does not work at this point. However, there's a workaround for that.
An ISO would be, say, like you have like...
Rip the whole DVD.
Yeah, and you just have the
menus
whole...
Menus and all,
yeah,
right.
Like I do that sometimes. I've created like... DVDs of like home videos, and I just have the ISO image sitting on my server.
So what you still have to do with those, and this will be fixed in 23 coming out in March, you still have to mount them locally through NFS, and then you specify the local path to that NFS mount to be able to display videos.
That's how I do it now.
Like, right. Well, you won't have to once all of this stuff gets moved into the storage groups. I'll tell you why.
But if that's if they're local, right?
Yeah,
right.
That's if they're local. But you can.
Mine is sitting on the server.
No, the storage groups works on the server. It works remotely, I should say. And this is why if you set up a local video directory, and you happen to have the same content in the local video directory and the storage group sitting out on the server. The server one is what takes precedence. Okay, so it's gonna stream all of that information to you.
So the big advantage of all this is the metadata.
Exactly, it's all stored in one location.
Because before the storage groups, you know, you would have all different front ends. Mm-hmm. You would say like you had your videos. You would have to pull down all the metadata.
You would have to do this NFS mounting and do all of that to each box. And now you don't have to. It automatically streams from the back end.
I see where it is. So basically, you have your main box, and then you connect. Like you do now, do the remote setup,
right?
But you don't have to do any extra stuff for your Myth videos,
right?
All that stuff will get pulled in automatically when it does the database connection.
Exactly. Okay. Yep.
So that's a big advantage.
It is a big advantage, and it all streams from the back end, so it streams right over the network, just as if I switch that cam card that sits on the master server back there and watch the live TV over the cam. It is doing the same exact thing. So. Anything that related to like the movies that I have out there. So now Handbrake just came out, and I've been ripping movies left and right. Okay, I dump them right onto the server. I run the little JAMU script interactively to download all the
How
content.
How is that? Did you do a mass
it
update?
It is it just goes through and looks at anything that it doesn't have any data out there, and asks you these are all the potential matches out there. Select the one that you want.
And it's usually there.
And it's usually there. And if not, you can go out, search IMDb, find the code for it, and allows you to enter the code.
So
what's
the information that's What's the metadata that gets pulled down?
It gets
movie?
The cover art. It gets a fan art, which replaces in a in a like an alpha transparency background that does the whole screen.
Right, it does that with the recordings now, too.
Right, it does this with the movies as well.
That's cool.
It pulls in like a synopsis of the movie, the year that it was out there, genre,
the director,
you know,
who's
the director.
In it. Gotcha.
Yeah, that type of stuff. It is really, really slick how it all works. And I just drop a movie out there, and it's available immediately. I don't even necessarily have to do scanning or anything like that anymore. A lot of that is all being done for you. I typically just quick go in and scan it, make sure that there's nothing else and that type of thing, and allow it to update all of those video listings. Now, the big part will be when this comes down is once they finally move everything else over to it, so your music, your images or whatnot, I'm currently building an IN front-end box very similar to yours, slightly different. Once that box is built, I will be able to just sit this thing on the network, and it will automatically configure all of that stuff for me. I don't need
to
do anything
just
special
to the database.
Other than point to that IP address for the database. That's it. Right. And now I'm really hoping this leads me to a couple of things that I found to be an issue. I myth archive some things, and if you happen to have recordings on a master backend and a secondary backend, and you run it off of the secondary backend, it does not communicate with the master backend.
So it sits on a local directory.
Yeah, Myth Archive is strictly a local only program. It has not been updated. I don't know if the intention is, but I'm hoping that recordings will also get moved into these storage groups that are exposed on the network. I'm assuming that's how they are now. So I would think it wouldn't be much for Myth Archive to take advantage of that, so that it can at least divvy out a job. Say, here, commercial flag, or, you know, do the transcoding and do all that here on this machine. Okay, it exists somewhere else. Also, do it over on that machine. You know,
apply the same setup.
Yeah, allow it to do all that stuff over the remote and just download the file into the local temp directory and make the ISO image of the DVD from that. So I'm hoping that is something that gets added into this, into the Myth Archive. But the storage groups are definitely a plus. I am really, really liking how that is implemented.
Try it.
It is great. Now, I couldn't do it right out of the box with just the master backend, however. You need to have the Myth Video plugin enabled on the master backend. Even though I'm never going to watch a video out there, it sits in the back room, because otherwise the JAMU scripts didn't get installed. The storage groups, yet you specify them in the Myth TV setup, but they weren't being recognized for it. They weren't actually sharing any content out. And so as soon as I went in, pointed, you know, the storage group to the appropriate location and had the Myth Video plugin enabled on the master backend, everything was fine. It just exposed all that stuff on the network. I could flip through videos, you know, do everything, pause, you know, save bookmarks, anything that I wanted to, and it all looks crystal clear, and
that's
it's
awesome.
Beautiful. I am really, really liking
now,
it.
Now, did you have any issues with Myth Music where I noticed this, where a lot of my music wasn't getting picked up when I was doing the scans? And I think it was related to, because my metadata on my music, you know, I've had stuff that I've ripped like mm-hmm. years ago. I'm talking like 7-8 years ago. And back then, you know, all that metadata wasn't available.
Yeah.
You just basically ripped it to a file and directory.
I haven't noticed it. I haven't noticed it missing anything.
I went in and I did like mass updates using mm-hmm. Music Brains, Picard.
Yeah.
And that helped a lot. I did the updates and mm-hmm. it's picking up now.
Yeah.
So
I haven't noticed any issue. I mean, I saw that it pulled in about 3,700 songs or something like that. I got a lot of stuff on that.
Yeah,
and
it's amazing how much crap you have over the years.
And that is roughly what I remember it to be the last time I went through and did some type of account on those directories. And
I got like 20 gig of music.
Yeah, yeah.
It's you know, you don't realize how much you have.
Oh, I know, yeah. So I will be really happy when the Myth Music gets the
rework.
Yeah, that will be not only the interface but also the storage groups, because that will be
same
awesome.
Deal.
Yeah,
if they could do the same thing that they do in Myth Video to Myth Music, that
would
be awesome.
Another nice thing that the storage groups is going to offer is that you'll be able to set up these storage groups on any backend that you have. So I could theoretically say I throw another RAID card in, you know, I want to have, say, all my videos right on that machine there and leave all the music and the photos over on the other screen. I could set up a storage group on that on that secondary backend, and then they would be available on any other device on the network as well. So those storage groups are definitely going to be a plus to Myth TV when they is all said and done. So, and I'm hoping that most of that integration is taken care of by Myth 23, which will be very, very soon.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that they've really done a great job.
Yeah, they have.
They've really, the thing that I, you know, just the visual look of and feel of it, it takes it from, you know, being TiVo-esque and, mm-hmm. and Sage TV looking,
yeah,
kind of old and outdated, to more modern, boxy HDMC looking.
Right, yeah.
And I think that we really needed it.
And I think that the Myth UI stuff is only going to get better with time, too. I know the Mythbuntu people have done a phenomenal job with this interface right now, and I think that that's only just going to get better with time. Yeah, I really do.
The Myth people, they're having a contest for Myth 23 to see people develop themes.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, I'm sure if they can get like, you know, half a dozen really nice themes, that'd be great.
Yep.
So that's good stuff. Black Friday here in the States came up, which is the Friday after Thanksgiving. And typically, those are like huge shopping, you know, days where people, you know, they get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and they go to the store and they wrestle around on the floor, punching and eating, kicking each other to get electronics. Now, I don't do that crap.
Right.
You couldn't pay me to do that.
Right.
But, you know, I did look for some online deals, and there were deals to be had on Black Friday.
Mm-hmm.
One deal that I saw was the HD Home Run was being offered for like $125.
Right, yeah.
Now, that was like a one-day deal. I actually found another one. If you go to our forums, I posted another one. It's an Amazon partner.
Mm-hmm.
You can get the HD Home Run for $120.
Really?
I think you still can get it. I think it's till next week.
Really?
So
I may have to consider that.
Now, the HD Home Run is a dual tuner deal. The Silicon Dust is coming out with a single tuner version that's going to sell for $99.
Oh, really?
But for $20 more, yeah, man, get the dual tuner.
Right,
man.
Yeah.
It's a great device. I have it. I've been using it for a few months now, and it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Great, great thing. The other thing I picked up, I didn't buy anything. I didn't get because I had it already. I did pick up a wireless keyboard for my Ion box.
Right,
upstairs,
yeah.
And that's a real nice box. And during the last Tech Show on Wednesday, Link told me that keyboard is actually the same keyboard that the Norris technology people ship with the Norris line.
Right.
And so it comes with a little USB dongle for an RF transmitter.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Now, the Ion box has dual USB connections that are like side mounted.
Mm-hmm.
So I just popped that right in the front and covered the grill over it.
Right.
It works great.
Right.
It's real nice. Now, that keyboard was going for like, it's an Adesso keyboard. I put a link on my blog. And that keyboard was selling for like
$65, $70
at one point. I paid like $35 for it.
Right.
I got a really
good deal
on Black Friday for
it. I was actually looking at that one a few weeks ago, and I was tempted to get it then, but I didn't have all the other components for that Ion box yet, so I'm still collecting them as I go. So
speaking of Ion boxes, there is a deal. The Acer Revo,
mm-hmm.
which is one of the first Ion-type boxes released,
right.
It's on sale on Amazon for $199.
Is it really?
Now, this is the single-core core version. Supposedly, you know, people on the Myth TV users mail on the site, that's enough for front end.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's a single core, it's still good to use. Go
right,
for it.
Right.
The only limitation on that, what they give you with that setup is it comes with a 160 gig hard drive with Windows XP on it,
mm-hmm.
and they only give you 1 gig of memory.
Right.
So me personally, I would rather get rid of the hard drive, get a thumb drive, and give me more memory.
Yeah.
So, but you can't choose that.
Right.
That's what's on there.
It looks like an external hard drive enclosure, basically.
That's what it looks like. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
a little more modern, but
that's a great deal. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking to get a cheap front end, man, that's kind of like the price range of what a popcorn hour goes for.
Right. Right.
But you can get a full Myth, you know, installed, you know, experience.
I
think it's a better deal.
Right.
Now, me personally, I'm not going to give my money to Microsoft. They're not getting a freaking cent from me ever again. Okay? And I have a problem with going out and buying a box that has Windows on it.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, you're going to nuke it, but that's just me. My choice. But
yeah.
People, that's a pretty good deal for an Ion-type box. You know, for $200, that's pretty sweet. Now, that doesn't have the mounts like the case that I got that you can mount it on the back of the TV.
Right, yeah. I'm pretty sure with a little box like that, you could probably break something
up.
You
don't really need much.
It's
a small box, man. You don't even realize it. But that's a sweet deal. So, people, if you're looking for a front end, the Acer Revo on Amazon, $199 is a good deal.
Right.
So, those are my shopping tips for this week. We're still waiting for the PVR 1212 to be on sale.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that one coming down so I can pick one of them up.
Yeah.
Because we were looking at some of your recordings here, and they just look outstanding.
They really look good. Like, my HD Home Run, you know, records the QAM signal unencrypted over the cable. Now, they look good, okay? But, you know, the cable companies, they tend to compress those
a little bit.
But, The 1212, man, I think it looks phenomenal.
It does. It looks really, really, really good.
Really nice, crisp, sharp. You know, sounds good. It's really nice.
Right.
Even the standard F recordings look pretty good. Now, when I was running with the PVR-150 as my main capture device, the analog stuff, I was getting about 2 gig for 1 hour recording. Mm-hmm. And that was at like one of the higher settings. With standard F on the PVR-1212 for like 1 hour, you know, which is H.264, it's around 800 meg.
Mm-hmm.
And the quality is probably slightly better
right.
than the 2 gig recording. Right. So it's 800 meg for 1 hour versus the 2 gig
mm-hmm.
and PEG-2, you know. And I think the quality was slightly better.
Right.
So, you know, the thing with those H.264 videos is it's very CPU intensive.
Right.
VDPU can handle that.
Mm-hmm.
Now you talking about some issues that you had with your video card. What are you currently using?
Yeah, I have an 8400 series GeForce card. It's an NVIDIA GeForce card. Okay. I think it's from Gigabyte. It's a good card. You know, I've had, you know, beautiful results with it in the past. The thing that I'm noticing right now is, and when I was showing you on your TV, when I look at a standard def, I don't have the standard black bars along the side. I have a very, very tiny, they're about an inch. Now, this is a 56-inch diagonal TV, you know, diagonal TV, 56 inches. It's about an inch, maybe to 2 inches of black on either side of it. So it doesn't look like it's distorting the standard def picture at all. It just makes it bigger, you know, across the whole screen. I don't have a problem with that.
Did you try changing your aspect?
Yes, I've been going through all of those, and I'm not entirely sure what is going on. Now, for the high def recordings, I'm getting a letterboxing as well, but it's horizontal bars on the top and the bottom of it.
That's weird.
And I you can mess with, like, right from, you know, hit the menu button and say do the fill and do all of that, which I think is some of that has been either reworked or is pretty new for this version. It does it, but like, say, like where you're seeing like the little icon on the screen is like 3/4 of the way off the screen, you know. So
like an overscan. Almost.
Yeah. So there's some type of an issue going on, and I was hoping that the 190 driver would have resolved it, but it also doesn't really. I'm assuming it's just a configuration setting that I happen to be missing somewhere, and I'm not quite sure what's going on with it. It's still something that I'm looking into.
Yeah, we'll take a look.
But it still looks really, really nice, even though you're getting the letterbox.
Yeah, it's annoying.
You're getting the full field view of it and whatnot, you know, but it still looks really, really nice, you know.
Now, what happens when you drop it out of Myth and just go to, like, a desktop and you try to play the video? What does it look like?
I've played some videos, but not any recordings.
Like MPlayer or VLC?
Yeah.
Just to see.
Yeah, I'll have to check and see. Run it full screen, see what it does. I think I did do a VLC full screen, and that was fine. I mean, it looked fine. It was one of my kids' Disney DVDs that I couldn't get to rip through Handbrake. It's really, really weird. It actually reorders the chapters and whatnot. But that played fine through VLC, you know, full screen, everything. I mean, it looked really, really good. But when I jump back into the Myth, into Myth, I'm getting a very strange letterboxing that occurs, whether it's standard definition or high definition.
Yeah, we'll have to take a look.
Maybe yeah,
we'll go through a second set of eyes sometimes.
So. Yeah, yeah. I've looked it over and over and over, and I know I'm just missing something.
Yeah,
so
something really simple.
Yeah. See, it goes back to that. Don't drink and install. You know what I mean? So I probably said something when I was thinking, oh, I'll just do this right now, and boom, you know, now I have, you know, the weird letterboxing taking place. One other issue that I also noticed that I was having is on the master backend is that it's an Enforce board, and so it has a gigabit LAN on that board. It, for some reason, is registering with the router as only 100 megabits.
That's
and
odd.
I can tell this. I have a brand new TrendNet concurrent dual band 5 gigahertz, 2.4 gigahertz wireless end router. It's really, really nice. It does a lot of stuff. It can run concurrently the 24 or 2.4 gigahertz as well as the 5 gigahertz bands, and you can dedicate, you know the QoS and stuff like that, you know, here or there. I mean, there's quite a bit of stuff that you can do with it. It's a really, really nice box, and you can get it for pretty cheap. It actually changes LED colors when I have a gigabit connection to it. So my Myth TV hooks, or the one in the entertainment center hooks right up to the router, and it changes red. That means that it's gigabit. The server then changes, you know, staying at green, and I'm not entirely sure why it's staying at green. So that's something I'm looking at. I actually did a search on the Myth, on the Ubuntu forums, and other people are seeing the same issue. So I'm not sure if there's
might be a driver issue.
Yeah, I'm not just sure if maybe it didn't register the force death driver or something like that. But I'm going to have to go in and check the modules, make sure that that one's actually being loaded. Well, a long time
ago, force death, there were issues with this.
Yeah, yeah.
Supposedly all that stuff is resolved now.
So maybe it's an issue with my board. Maybe I should look at the BIOS, see if that's maybe turned, it's maybe knocked down for some reason or another.
Yeah, check your BIOS settings. It's possible.
If not, they have, you know, out on Newegg, they've got like these Rosewill PCI 1, you know, PCI Express 1 slot, you know, Ethernet cards for like $14. If worse comes to worse, I'll just grab one of those and throw it in there, you know.
Shouldn't have to, though.
Now, I did get one benefit out of this. You know, I don't know if this has been because of the conversion or whatever, but, and I'm going to whisper this here, the FireWire lets me do HBO. It never did that before. It always just crapped out on me, you know.
That's premium content, buddy. Yeah,
and I don't want anybody to know that.
That's premium content. I'm going to have to shut you up. Shut you down.
Yeah. But it comes over the FireWire. I was really surprised. Well, now, periodically, I do notice that sometimes the sound drops out on it. And that's probably just because of the what is it, 5C encryption or something like
probably.
That.
Probably.
But it's exposed. It works. You know, I was really, really amazed at that.
I don't get HBO. Yeah. I shut it off.
Yeah, I was really, really surprised when it was coming through and it was working. So
I think the last time I had HBO was when The Sopranos were on, like
yeah.
third or fourth season.
Oh, yeah.
Before it jumped to Shark.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So, but all in all, that's the. I mean, with the new router in place and setting up the storage groups and separating out the boxes, it's ready for the new box to be just, you know, placed at another TV. This is going to be wireless end box. It's going to be it's going to actually be, if I can get it working right, another secondary back end. You can have live TV right over that.
Insane setup you got.
Tell me about it, man. I don't fuck around, you know. So.
Did you got to have some front ends too?
Well, there is going to be, eventually there'll be one more, and I want to put that one up in our bedroom. This one is going to go in our sunroom. We have a small TV that sits out there. I really like that the VGA box that you bought to convert to S-Video or whatever.
If you're running an ion box, I'm going to do something like that. FTV, yeah. You need to convert a box.
So I'm looking forward to getting this little box, this little low power box set up, and it's really going to expand this network out as much as I can. So
what a setup, man. Mm-hmm. You see, I went in like on the day before Thanksgiving. I went to a Sixth Avenue Electronics, which is a chain that's in like New York and Jersey. I work in New Jersey, and there was a place right near my office that I go to, and I went in there, man. And basically, they don't advertise, but basically, they'll let you have the Black Friday prices on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving if you ask. And I went in there, and they had some really sweet deals. They had like 40-inch LCDs for like $550. They had like 2-3 different models,
right?
And they had nice plasmas at very good prices too. So. You know, I'm talking to the wife. I'm like, next year I'm going in and I'm getting at least a 40-inch LCD.
Do you see those LED TVs?
Those are really expensive. They're expensive.
I know. They're like $45,000 or $5,000.
That'll come down, though.
But they are this thin. For those you can't see here, I have about an inch gap between my thumb and forefinger. Yeah, they are that. They are so thin, and they draw like almost no power.
Yeah,
it's, and they look beautiful.
That's
from
the future.
Yeah, it is.
Give it like 5 or 6 years.
Yeah,
you'll see them.
They are slick looking.
Yeah, it's like now, you know, like. You know, they used to have the rear projections. Now they're LCDs and plasmas, and they'll go to LEDs eventually.
Yep.
You know,
I hear all kinds of acronyms, NEDs, SEDs. There's a bunch of them out there. I haven't seen any prototypes
in January,
of those yet,
during CES, watch like, you know, G4 or CNET.
Yeah, right,
you know, check
right.
Out some of the CNET stuff.
Yep.
They have a lot of coverage of that stuff, and you'll see tons of that new stuff coming down the pipe.
Right.
So that'll be that. So this week we're going to try something new. We're going to actually have a call in. We're actually going to call them, and we're going to talk to someone. So let's go get them on. So Eric, welcome to the show. You can.
Thank you very much.
Let me ask you: Are you a veteran Linux user, or what's your level of expertise with Linux?
I've been using Linux for about 4 years now. I started since grad school because that's what we had in our labs, but it's very great. I hate Windows, so this is a great alternative for me. But as I've gotten more experience with this, I've really gotten looking into Myth TV, and I really want to get my system set up. Hopefully I'll have some time on Christmas break.
Cool.
So, yeah, I'm pretty experienced.
Now, you used DVR systems before?
Yes, actually, back when I was living in a different state, my brother had set up a replay TV system.
Oh, okay.
And that worked out quite well, but of course, you're pretty limited to what they give you. He, like, swapped for a bigger hard drive, but that's about all he could do with it. But MIT TV, obviously, is so much more flexible. That's kind of what I wanted to get going with.
Cool, cool. So what are you looking to do primarily? Just like a primary front and back end combined system at first? Is that something you're looking to do?
I'm actually looking at doing a separate backend, the master backend, because I want to use that as like my all-purpose PC, but I'm making it pretty powerful so it can handle everything else too. Then have a separate front end that I actually purchased recently, that Acer Aspire Revo.
Oh,
yeah. It's been mentioned on the forums a lot, and I haven't put Mifubuntu on it yet, but I booted it up just to start with, even though it has Windows on it, but it works great. So I'm going to swap that out and put Mifubuntu on as soon as I get the back end set up first.
That's cool. Yeah, those Revos, we were talking about it a few minutes ago, and you can get them for like $200 on Amazon.
Right.
It's a pretty sweet deal.
Yeah, actually, Best Buy had a sale for, it was like $180, plus I had a $25 off coupon, so
nice.
I saved quite a bit on it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I've been looking at all the deal sites for Christmas shopping, so it pays off.
Yeah, because, you know, that's like a price range of like a popcorn hour. Now, I had a popcorn hour, which is a nice, you know, media front-end type device,
mm-hmm.
you know, but you don't get that full MIF experience using that thing. The
right.
best you could do is, you know, put like a network share of your recordings with the renamer script and access it that way.
Right.
You know, where if you get like one of these little Ion boxes, you get the full MIF experience as a front-end.
Right, and it's funny you mentioned the Ion box, because I'd actually emailed you about a couple months ago, because I was entertaining the idea of building the Zoltac box like you did, Pat. And I kind of held off on it, but then when this Aspire Revo deal came, I just figured I was too good to pass up. So.
Right.
Yeah, that is a sweet deal. So let me ask you, what are you looking to record? Are you going to do over the air? Are you going to do a cable, satellite? What's your setup going to be like?
I have digital cable here, and it has the free HD channels. And I actually have purchased an HD PVR, but it's been unboxed because I haven't had a chance to set it up yet. Yeah. So I will be capturing primarily some high-def programming and also some standard def from the cable box. I don't think I'll do any over-the-air stuff at this point. So for my primary tuner, I'm only going to use the HD PVR because I've heard such good things about it.
Now, this is the PVR 1212, the hot box, right?
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I've been really happy with mine.
Yeah, we were looking at some of his recording just a bit earlier, and it is really, really nice. The picture quality is just outstanding.
Yeah, even the standard def stuff, you know, the files are much smaller. You know, when I was using the PVR 150 card, you know, like I had like a high setting. For like an hour standard def, I was doing about 2 gig. Now with the PVR 1212 on a standard def channel, I get about 800 meg, and the quality is slightly better than what I had with the PVR 150. So even with standard def stuff, I think it's worth to use it.
Yeah, and this kind of leads me to one of my questions about the PVR 1212. Do you watch a lot of live TV with it? And if so, have you had any issues with that?
Honestly, no. I really don't use my recording stuff to watch live TV. You know, I okay. You know, one of the things that I did was when I did the upgrade to Mifubuntu 910, you know, my main box was originally sitting upstairs in the family room. And what I did was when I did this upgrade, I sent it down here to the man cave. And, you know, all my recording is done down here now. And the wife actually likes that a lot because she could sit upstairs watching her shows and she doesn't have to worry about, you know, accidentally changing a channel on something that I'm recording off the cable box.
Right.
And that's a big win. She's seen, you know, the advantage of that right away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the other thing is, you know, because I have my Ion box upstairs now, is that thing is dead quiet. It's in it, and one of the really nice things is, you know, I can hit exit off that, and you get that little menu saying shutdown
mm-hmm.
via the remote. It's such a simple thing, but it really makes a big difference, I think.
Right.
Yeah, that's great, because I'm actually going to put my digital cable box in my office where the back end will be, so it'll be kind of similar to what your setup is, and just have the Acer box in my living room where the HDTV is, so it'll be very minimal.
Yeah, and those little boxes, they draw very little power. That's another thing that's really
right.
nice.
Now,
and of course, the ever-attractive thing was VDPAU. That's when it cinched it for me that'd be a good way to go.
That's beautiful. The VDPAU, it really, really drives a lot of the that processing power over into the GPU. Yeah. It works great.
It delivers.
Now, that you said you don't watch anything live right now, Pat. I have been following some people talking about this on the Myth TV developers mailing list. They've been asking that question, can I watch this stuff? Can I do this stuff over the HD PVR?
And it's a little flaky, right?
Well, no. Everyone seems to say that it's working okay. It'll probably just depend upon your setup or whatever. Now, you're also going to be sending it over the network at the time, too, Eric. So when you do have that setup, if you want to watch live TV, so you may get a hiccup here and there, I'd think, or something like that. But for the most part, the Myth devs are saying that should be possible. Especially you should even be able to access things like on demand and all of that. You may not be able to do that remotely. You may not be able to access the on demand stuff remotely unless you do some funky stuff with IR blasting or the FireWire.
Yeah, that's what
FireWire
I was
going to
ask
blasting.
You. How are you looking to do your channel changing?
Yeah, actually, I want to do FireWire because my brother had issues with the Replay TV and IR blasting. And I wanted to get away from that. So I'm hoping that it's a Scientific Atlanta 4250 HD box. I'm hoping there isn't much issues with connecting that to the back end. I read on the wiki there's a good page about FireWire. I just hope it's not too difficult to set up the first time.
Well, on the Mythbuntu forums, Major Idiot has the scripts out there. He doesn't maintain them anymore, but it's called Myth Changer.
That's what I'm using.
Yeah,
now.
I was using it previously, but I was running into issues with it. But I was also trying to record and do changing over the same wire.
Yeah,
So I was having some issues with it. Pat doesn't seem to have.
I don't do any recording over FireWire. I just do the channel changing, and my failure rate. It's pretty low. I'd say it's maybe 5 to 10% of the time I have a failure.
Right.
But it's pretty accurate. So, you know, I think I'm going to stick with it and see how it goes.
Mm.
And I know you said you switched over.
Yeah, I'm actually using the IR script. Now, the IR scripts are in there. They're in, it goes down, you have to do a search on it. It's like user share, Myth TV, all the way down. There's a directory called changers, and they have changers for all kinds of devices in there. And they're selectable from the Myth Control Center. But you can go in and tweak some of those if you need to. I mean, they're all just like Perl or Bash or something like that.
Or Python, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, for remote control, what are you using?
That's actually what I wanted to ask you guys about. Those are a couple of components I haven't purchased yet, is remote control and also graphics for the back end. But I wanted your recommendations on just a control that just works, you know, but also possibly a wireless keyboard as well for the front end in case I have to configure anything on there.
Okay.
You guys had any thoughts on that?
For wireless keyboard, you know, both of my systems, I just picked up an Adesso wireless keyboard, which is has like a little USB RF dongle, on my Ion box, and I paid like $35 on Black Friday. They were running specials. I think it's a little more expensive now. I think it's about $50 now, if you look around. But that keyboard was going for like $60-$70, and that's a very good keyboard. It, you know, with the RF, it worked right out of the box with Linux. I had zero tweaking to do. A bunch of the multimedia buttons worked, like the volume control and the mute and all that stuff. Works. I didn't have to do anything. I also have another one. I forget what brand it is. I paid maybe $20 for it.
Yeah, I have one like that too, and it's a piece of crap. I can't stand it.
The one I have is good. It's actually a known brand that are slightly cheaper than the Adessos. The Adessos are a little more money. I think this one, the updated version of the one I have, I think is going for about $35.
Okay.
I'll look it up to see what model it is, and I'll post it in the forum. Now, as far as like remote controls, honestly. The best remote control that I've seen is the Microsoft MCE branded ones. Now, they're Philips remotes, okay, with just a Microsoft rebranding on them, okay? They're not selling them new anymore.
Yeah.
If you go on, like, eBay, you could probably pick one up for about $15 to $20.
I think I found one on Amazon recently, and it's probably, like, about $35 or something.
Yeah,
like that.
I wouldn't pay more than, like, $30 for it. They go under other different model names, like... The one I picked up for my Ion box, I wound up going on an auction. I think it was rebranded as a Dell OVU.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot the model number. I think I posted it, but I'll post it again in the forum for this episode. I'll list what the rebranding name is.
Now, do you have a Wii or anything like that? You can use a Wiimote and with a little Bluetooth dongle as well. I mean, there's...
I've seen that page. Yeah, I do have a Wii, actually. So I wondered if they made that easier to set up. That'd be another option, too.
I think so. And one of the guys in Linux Journal a few months back had a good write-up in there on how to use the Wiimote, the nunchuck and even the remote control or the keypad or the pad controller as well. So I mean, he did quite a bit of quite a write up. You can probably find it out on linuxjournal.com.
Yeah, and another nice thing about that Microsoft MCE remote, it has dual blasters on there.
Yeah, that's really nice.
And it works. You don't have to use it, but if you do need it, you got it. You know, and it works pretty well. It's you know, the MCE remote is it's the receiver and the blaster are recognized with most of the specific distros. I know with Ubuntu, the remote, everything would work right out of the box. You don't have to do anything. You know, when you do the blasting, there's a little extra work you have to do. Mm-hmm. You'll have to go in and play around with the blasting script. You might have to, you know, put the IR sensor, you know, right on the sweet spot where the receiver is on the cable box. And then you go into the MIT-TV setup and you say, for this capture device, use this blaster script, you know. But if you use one of the ones that people, you know, say works with whatever cable box you got, you should be okay. Should be too difficult, but definitely try doing the firewire changer and see how it works with your cable box and if you have issues. And if you have the failure rate and it's high and it's really bad, then I would recommend maybe trying the IR blasting too.
Now, I'm not sure, but there are specific setups for those Scientific Atlanta boxes inside that myth changer script. So he might have a little better luck than we were having, because they had a couple different options for the Motorola boxes, which is what we have.
Right, you got the older one. I have the newer one.
Right, and I mean, that could be the reason why I was getting the failure rate that I was, too. You know, but the Scientific Atlanta, I believe it just supported natively in that script.
Well, that's encouraging, because I wasn't sure what kind of support it had, so... I'm thinking I'll definitely lean towards that Microsoft MCE remote. Just sounds like that's the easiest way to go then.
Yeah, if you can find it, they're good quality and they
Philips.
Yeah, it's a Philips brand, you know, so it's a good quality remote, it's a good quality receiver.
And it's been supported in MIT for a long time.
Yeah, for a long, long time.
Okay, so I need like a separate dongle for each of the remote and the keyboard. Or how does that work?
Yeah, you'd have a separate. There'd be a separate USB port for the IR blaster for the remote receiver, and then a separate one for your keyboard. Unless you happen to pick one up that uses a typical, you know, standard PS2 connection or something like that.
Yeah, the older one I have has the PS2 type connections, where the new one is it's a USB dongle that does RF signals. They both work, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's great. And I have just maybe a couple other questions, one of which is, how much memory would you recommend for the back-end system if I want to make it like an all-purpose system at the same time as it's doing like
you're gonna
the
be using,
capturing?
You're going to be using this like a desktop, right?
Yeah, a desktop, right. I'll do
as
like maybe a virtual machine as much as you can. Yeah,
as much as you can.
If you're going to be using that box for other things while it's doing like, you know, commercial flagging and encoding and whatnot, I would get... The bare minimum, 2 gig.
Yeah.
Memory's cheap, I would go for 4 gig.
Yeah. Is it a 32-bit or a 64-bit box?
It's going to be a 64-bit box.
Definitely go with the 4 gig.
Yeah, the processor is pretty beefy. It's an AMD Phenom 2 X4 965.
Nice. Wow, that's real nice.
It's gotten good deals recently, so that's why I've been holding off. But I figured if I'm going to get that kind of processor, I'll get at least 4 gig memory. But I just want to make sure that's... Kind of like a sweet spot to target.
Right, yeah.
Memory's cheap, man. Go for the 4 gig.
And the 32-bit, you'd have to do some funky stuff with the kernel to get them to recognize the 32-bit.
On the Ion box, my Ion box, I got 4 gig in there. Okay, now the Ion is 32-bit installed in there. With the newer versions of Mythbuntu, it gives you the PAE kernel as an option.
Yeah.
And that recognizes more than 3 gig.
Does it do it on more than just the Ion boxes, or does it do it on...
I think it does it on anything.
On anything? Oh, okay. Then you wouldn't have that issue. Okay.
Yeah. The only thing that you might have issues with, but 64-bit, is flash support. Mm. Now, with Ubuntu in general, well, Mythbuntu, what they do is they do that NS plugin wrapper, which is you're basically going to be using the 32-bit flash binary. In on the 64, and it works okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like a little extra step to get it going.
Right.
And honestly, 64-bit's been really rock solid. My main
Myth
box,
yeah.
I haven't had any problems with 64-bit.
Nope, neither have I. Not in like three releases. It's been really, really solid.
Yeah, actually, the last Linux distro I installed was Hardy 64-bit, but that would have lockups on occasion, so I'm hoping that, Karmic's been better with 64-bit at least.
It's gotten better.
Yep.
Okay. And then the last thing I was thinking of is this backend is going to have multiple hard drives, and I was thinking of having one hard drive just dedicated to, like, the OS itself, but then having, like, a 2-terabyte hard drive for all the videos and the captures. Is that difficult to set up when you're installing Mythbuntu, having a separate OS drive and the media stored somewhere else on a different hard drive?
Nope, I actually just did that myself. This is how I partition my I just read, well, when you go back and listen to this episode, I'll talk about my whole setup, how I redid everything just over the past couple of weeks with it. I specified one drive. When you go through the installer, you have to do a manual partitioning of the drive. Don't let it just say select everything and it'll probably just pick your largest drive and try to use that one only and mount the other ones as other mount points. You want to do a manual partitioning on it. The first thing that you would do is designate one drive to be your root partition. You can set that to be EXT3 or 4, whichever you desire. It'll probably do EXT4 by default. The next thing you want to do is specify a second drive to be, well, what I did was I specified the second drive. I have four drives in this box. I specified the second drive to be the mount point /var/lib/mythtv.
Where your recordings are. That's where the recordings
are. And that's the default directory that Mythbuntu stores all of that information in. That I set up as an XFS file system because it tends to deal with the larger files a little bit better, a little more efficiently and whatnot. And I still don't know too much about EXT4 at this point to see if that's
my setup right now that I've, once I did the clean install, I'm using all EXT4.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't had any issues.
I have it all on the front end that way, so it's not doing it. I don't have any issues. I haven't had any issues with it so far. The last thing that I did then was I set my opt directory to a RAID card, which has 500 gigabyte drives on that RAID card. Now that's up to you if you want to get into that. The RAID cards are nice. You can get them for about $180 or something like that for two port cards just to do mirroring. That's all I'm using it for is mirroring. You can pick up two terabyte drives for about $160 a piece. I just did that recently for somebody. So it's a good way to have a good redundant backup on there. But like I said, that's optional. That's what I did. For your case, I would set one drive to be the root partition and one drive to be the /var/lib/mythtv.
Yeah, I think the case I'm getting actually has room for 10 hard drives if I really
that's
go.
That's huge. What is it, a refrigerator?
It's one of those Antec gaming cases, but it's just got so much room in it that it's just too hard to pass up for having this kind of future-proofed if I record a lot more down the road.
Well, if you do decide to go with a RAID card, the three-wear cards are great. They have nice PCI Express cards. You can get them for 2 ports to 12 ports or even 24 ports, I think. That is definitely a good option if you have a lot of stuff that you're going to plan on archiving and making sure that you have. Like I have, all my pictures of my kids and their videos and, all my music and, everything like that all stored right on the RAID mirror drives, and I designate that one drive only so that it can just do the current recordings and live TV, and as well as the recordings on my secondary back end / front end that they can go into their own and onto their own drive itself into a completely separate box. So it's definitely a good option if you want to have that redundancy built right into the system.
Yeah, my regular server, which is technically not a Myth server, I use it just to store stuff. I have a RAID. Actually, the same RAID card that Dan has.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's mirrored. That's because I have, family photos on there and my music. We talked about it a bit, Dan's setup. He's getting really crazy now. He's got, a secondary back end, front end. And you can go crazy with it.
Yes, you can.
Honestly.
And I plan to.
Honestly, I tell people that do a first-time install, do a combined front and back end. But, if you're a little more adventurous, go for it.
Well, the nice thing about, in your case, Eric, here, when you run through the MythTV setup, if you're using Mythbuntu, you can designate it to be a desktop as well. So if you want a GNOME desktop or an FCE desktop or even, I think, a KDE desktop, you can do all that right from inside the Mythbuntu installer. Or you can just do a regular Ubuntu install and then, add the Mythbuntu repositories in there and get access to all of that as well. So you can just do it after the fact. Your probably best bet would be to go through the Mythbuntu ISO, download that, burn it to a disk, and set it up that way. Then you can specify what type of role you want it to be: master backend with a desktop, master backend, master front end, or front end and a desktop. You can have all of those things. And I believe if you do the desktop option, it doesn't fire up up the Myth front end by default. So you can then, you still have that option to go in and watch something after the fact right there on that machine if you want to.
Right. You would have your desktop that you do your normal work and in your programs listings.
Right.
You know, your applications, you would see Myth TV front end.
Right.
You could fire it up and watch your shows.
Right.
Your recordings.
Plus, if you don't select it right off the bat, you can always go back after the fact and select it right from the Myth Control Center and enable those.
Yeah, so it sounds like definitely install the back end first, and then when that's working, then put the Mythbuntu on the Acer, but
definitely
choose just the front end setup for that.
Right.
I don't need the Ubuntu desktop on that thing. I just want it to do front end only.
Right. Yeah, and the only thing you would need would be the IP address and the database
password. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Make sure you write that down once you do the back end setup.
And that if you're unfamiliar with it, is located in /etc/mythtv/ or in my.txt or mysql.txt, I think it is. That's where they store that information.
It's also in the setup, so if you go through the MythTV setup, you'll see it
right
in there.
Yeah.
Great, so it's not too difficult to set that up once you have the back end set up.
Honestly, setting up a front end is really easy.
Yeah.
All you need is the IP address and the database password. That's it.
Yep. Everything else gets done for you.
Now, how much memory do you recommend in the front end? Because I know this Acer, I could put in more memory if I wanted to. It's got 1 gig right now, but I don't know if I should upgrade to 2 gig or what do you guys think?
I would do at least 2 gig.
I would do at least 2 gig.
One thing to remember about those Ion boxes is the very first thing you should do is go into the BIOS and push up the video card memory as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I think by default, like mine, by default, it was set at 256, and I bumped that up to 512.
Right.
Because some people, when it was set at 256, were running into issues where the video playback was a little flaky. But once they bumped it up, it improved the situation quite a bit. Because, mm-hmm. you know, with onboard graphics, it shares out the system memory. It takes
right.
from that. So you want to have, I would recommend at least 2 gig for the front end.
Plus, it's cheap.
Yeah, I think the memory for that should be pretty cheap. It's actually the memory for this back-end PC that's still a tad expensive, but it's not too bad. I think it's like under 100
so,
at least.
So what kind of board are you putting in that back-end? Is it going to be able to handle, I mean, you said it's going to handle that the AMD Phenom 2, right, X4? That's what, a quad core?
Yeah, it's a gigabyte, a huge code number here, but it's a socket AM3. It's got DDR3 slots.
Wow.
But the motherboard itself has 10 serial ATA slots for the hard drives.
Jeez, that probably has RAID built into it too, I would imagine.
Yeah, it does actually. They've had some good posts about some people using it for Myth. So
that is something.
That's good. It sounds like you've done your research. You know, anytime someone's going to do a Myth build, you know, spend a little extra time doing your research and find out what other people are doing.
Definitely.
It sounds like you're on the right track.
That's good for Linux in general. Do your research on your hardware.
Specifically for Myth, yeah. Because you're dealing very specific kinds of hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure I got any issues sorted out as I was configuring the hardware before I installed this. Because, I'm a bit nervous being my first build, but I've done this research for almost a year now, Myth in general. Mm-hmm. So
you'll do it right.
The forums are...
If you have any problems, you know, go on the forums, go on the Tripman mailing list. People will help you if you have issues.
Do you have a VirtualBox installed anywhere that you can just run through the setup and you can do it on, give it a 20 gig partition and just try it out and see what happens? That's a good way to just run through it and test it out. You won't be able to set up like any capture cards or anything like that, but you can at least get a feel for what's going on with the whole setup process.
Yeah, I still have that Hardy as a dual partition on this other PC here, so I could just try a virtual machine on that.
Yeah, try it
see
out
how
and
it
see.
Goes. Okay, I'll do that.
They have a guide out there as well, like an installation guide. You might just want to read through it. It's a bit dated at this point.
Yeah, the Mythbuntu one's like 8 something.
Yeah,
but it's still worth reading over.
It gives you a good lot of good pointers as to when you go to set up like your capture cards and your video cards and all that. What types of stuff you should be looking for.
Yeah, well, one of the things that people that do a Myth setup the very first time is the thing that tends to hang them up is when they do the capture card setups. Mm-hmm. When you do the capture card setup, first you go in, you say, okay, I have this capture device, and you establish it. And then when you have also your programming feed,
mm-hmm.
you go in and you set up your Schedules Direct. Go in and register for Schedules Direct before you even start the setup process.
Right.
So that you have a channel lineup all waiting for you ready to go. Okay, so then once you get into the actual MIDI-TV setup, you're gonna go in and select that Schedules Direct listing that you have set up already for
mm-hmm.
you. And then you have the card, you have the schedule information, and then what you need to do is you have to sign an input to your schedule's direct lineup. So it's almost like a three-step process.
Right.
You set up your card, you set up your schedule's direct, and then you set up your input and associate it with your schedule's direct lineup.
Yeah, and that installation guide would go over a lot of that.
Yeah, and at least with version 22, the PVR 1212 is built in as one of the capture devices you can choose, obviously,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Super easy. Mm-hmm. It was just like the old ones, the old cards. Really easy to set up.
Yeah, that's good.
I'm jealous, man. Everybody's got these 1212s out there. I got to get myself one.
You got to get a sale coming up.
Yeah.
Dell's the one who's been running the sales on them. Hopefully they're doing
right.
One soon.
Yeah, actually, Pat, the first time you posted on the forum that Dell sale, it was back in the summer. That's when I jumped on it because I wasn't sure if I'm going to be lower than that. So that's why it's been sitting for quite a few months.
Honestly, I got mine last February.
Yeah.
And finally to get it going, I was so happy. Well, Eric, if you have any more questions, let us know. If not, we appreciate talking to you. And, you have the honor as the first caller on our show.
And be sure to send us an email. Let us know how it all went. We would be interested to find out how it worked out for you for
the
first time.
Yeah, go on the forum. Let everybody know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm keeping a big log of all this hardware configuration, but I'll definitely keep a log of the setup and let you guys know. But, I mean, you guys have been a big help in getting me convinced that I could actually pull this off the way I'm trying to. So. I thank you guys, too.
You're welcome. It's honestly gotten a lot easier, man. It used to be a lot harder.
It used to be a bear. It really did.
Yeah, well, thank you again. I'm definitely listening to every show you have, so I'll keep you guys updated.
Cool.
Thanks.
Take care, right?
Thanks for your support, too.
All right, you too, guys.
Good night.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Bye.
And that was Eric, our very first caller.
Yeah, how about that?
That was cool.
It worked out really nice.
As soon as I remembered to unmute the our door, the channel where the phone was coming in.
Sounds like he's got a pretty sweet setup going.
I'm jealous, man.
Yeah.
I'm really jealous.
I wish I had the room to stick a case that could hold 10 drives in it. I don't have a room like that in my townhouse.
I'm really jealous, man. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you had a kick-ass system.
Yeah,
quad-core.
That board sounds nice, especially with the quad. I know there was some issue a while back with the kernel having support for the quad-core processors, but I believe that's all worked out now.
Cool.
Can you imagine you could be recording like three things and transcoding another thing and commercial flagging another thing?
With a system like that, you can do it.
Yeah, I mean, that board probably is going to be able to support. I've seen them now doing up to like 16 gigabytes of memory and
that's
whatnot.
Crazy.
So I mean, I can imagine that board is that's got to be something.
Well, the nice thing about the 1212, even the HD Home Run, is the CPU impact when you're doing recordings is pretty minimal. It's not really heavy at all.
Yeah.
So you can do other things. I had three recordings going at once.
Yeah.
And watched a show at the same time on the front end.
I had that with a dual core, with the 4 gigs of memory. I was watching one live, high definition. It was a hockey game, so it was a lot of action, a lot of refresh work going on, and still recording two other things and if commercial flagging things at the same time, not a hiccup.
Yeah. You can't do that with your cable TV.
No, you can't. No, you can't.
Your cable DVR.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so we're going a little extra here because we talked to Eric, and it was really cool to actually talk to somebody.
Yep.
And, maybe we'll do a full call-in show.
That'd be great,
Maybe next episode we could do that. Mm-hmm. That'd be great. Maybe we can do that.
Yep.
Do a full hour of just talking to people, at least 3-4 people.
Right.
So maybe we'll do that. All right, cool. Excellent. I think we're going to wrap it up, Dan. Thanks for sharing your information.
No problem. If anybody wants any information on how I had to do any of this stuff or any of the issues I ran into or what I had to do to relieve, all the alcohol, just let me know. Just let me know. I'm willing to help out.
That's cool. So everybody, thanks for listening, and we will catch you next time.
See you.